At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a beautiful day out there, sunshine, and oh, it's nice.
Don't you feel like Mr. Rogers? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It is a beautiful day. The farms are looking good.
Oh, yeah.
It's looking great, yeah.
Well, you were gone last week.
Yes.
And I certainly hope all is well, and we're back this week. What? Let's see, the last time you were here, we were talking. I can't remember.
Chisholm Trails.
Yeah.
So we're going to deviate from that
a little bit.
So I'm going to ask my listeners and you, Zeb, have you ever heard of a device called the heliograph? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, but I don't know as I remember what it was about.
Okay, a heliograph is a device with movable mirrors for signaling. Okay.
Oh, kind of like in the old days of the signal mirrors.
Right, exactly.
Oh.
So that's what we're going to talk about today is, in warfare, in battle, whatever, communication is absolutely the most important thing you can have. You know, and they used, you know, bugles and drums and things like that.
I could never understand smoke signals. Like if I see a puff of smoke, that doesn't tell me the cavalry's in the next canyon.
I don't understand that. Yeah, to me it's just...
One puff means attack, two puffs mean get the heck out of Dodge City.
Right. So this is kind of interesting about these heliographs and how they were used. But so, you know, you think about guys like Cochise, Geronimo, General Crook, Miles, you know, they're... all familiar with when you think of the bloody military in the Southwest, but an interesting aspect of the Army's efforts, that of the use of the heliograph for communication, really hasn't had much attention. You don't see that really that much, but the use of the ever-present southwestern sun, obviously sunny, was in a real sense a forerunner of today's sophisticated Army communication systems. So with these heliograph instruments, the military messages were sent quickly over long distances with less danger of misinterpretation.
Okay, no, wait a minute. Long distances.
And I'm going to tell you how far some of these went, as far as miles.
Were the heliographs the same as kind of the lights on submarines in World War II?
Sort of, but I think... You know, I'm not sure exactly if they were using Morse code or they had their own code.
Oh, I see.
Because I think in World War II, they used Morse code somehow with those lights,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
So, but, you know, as early as the Civil War, the Union Army experimented with small handheld mirrors, and they were operated by a key mechanism which quickly moved the mirror. But the action of the key was kind of clumsy. It needed constant readjustment to get it to work right.
Did it rely on the pauses and the quickness of the Morse code system?
I did not find exactly how they were able to have words and letters.
It doesn't make sense to me.
Unless it was Morse code.
Yeah.
And I don't know how.
So a short flash of light might be an A.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know the Morse. I need to check on that because maybe it was Morse code even back in the 1800s. I don't know. Maybe one of our listeners can tell us that. But, these early models were big. They were unhandy. They didn't have interchangeable parts. So they were pretty complicated and kind of hard to use.
Would they stand on a tripod or something?
It doesn't say that they did, but they had to have it sitting down so they had direct sunlight going on. But in the early 1880s, there was a first lieutenant, E.C. Grugin, of the Signal Corps, and he patented what he called a heliotrope instead of a heliograph. He called it a heliotrope, and it differed radically from the previous models. Grugin's device had circular mirrors, which were larger. So anyway, after the initial success of the heliograph in the last Apache campaigns, a board of officers was ordered to design a more efficient device for general Army use. So by 1888, the board had designed a strong, compact, lightweight heliograph, which was used up until 1917.
Oh, my.
Clear up into, you know, so, but it had... The nice thing, it had interchangeable parts. The mirrors were 4.5 inches square and could be knocked down into 3 lightweight packs.
I have a dumb question.
Okay.
Why would they call it a heliograph? What, graph signifies to me it's going to be on paper or something, yeah, you know?
I don't know. I mean, heliotrope, heliograph.
I'm lost.
Me too.
Okay.
So they come down with this newer one that's easier to carry, lighter weight. Because remember, they're going to the tops of mountains.
Yeah.
So you've got to carry this stuff up the hill. So after 1886, Chief Signal Officer A.W. Greeley said this. He said, "The use of the heliograph is rapidly growing at our frontier posts and has become a necessity for field campaigning. The demand for these instruments is far beyond the ability of this office to supply owing to limited appropriations. It is certain that this instrument for the coming years will hold its own in favor and usefulness." So he figured this was really going to catch on.
Okay.
And they needed more and more of them.
I got a dumb question.
Okay.
Again. Great on a sunny day.
I'm going to get to that.
Ah.
You knew that. So, in comparison to a flag, or, and I'd never heard this term, they called it wigwag.
Wigwag?
Wigwag signaling.
I don't know. That's a very extensive collegiate term.
No idea where wig-wag. That came from.
Okay.
Anyway, another officer, a guy by the name of Thompson, said, quote, "The extreme limit to which a signal by flag can be read with certainty falls so far short of the requirements for frontier signaling that the heliograph has rapidly come to the fore," is what he said.
Uh-huh.
So they were getting rid of the flags. But again, well, anyway, cloudy day, maybe the flags would be all right.
Yeah.
So undoubtedly, the heliograph, I got to have a drink, Zeb.
Yeah, go ahead. I won't tell them what you're drinking.
It's clear. So undoubtedly, the heliograph proved itself on the mountaintops of Arizona and New Mexico. Now, the last major campaign against the Chiricahua Apaches developed from the unsuccessful attempt by General George Crook to persuade or force the surrender of Geronimo and other Chiricahua leaders. And Crook resigned. I mean, he was not very successful there. So General Nelson Miles, Crook's replacement as commander of the Department of Arizona, he took advantage of the southwestern sunshine and ordered the establishment of a heliographic communication in southeastern Arizona and southwestern New Mexico. Miles actually ordered orders of April 20th, 1886, read as follows. Here's his orders. Okay. And I'm going to read this word for word. "The chief object of the troops will be to capture or destroy any band of hostile Apache Indians found in this section of country. To better facilitate this duty and afford as far as practicable protection to the scattered settlement, the territory is subdivided into districts of observation as shown upon maps and will be placed under commanding officers to be hereafter designated. The signal detachments will be placed upon the highest peaks and prominent lookouts to discover any movement of Indians and to transmit messages between the different camps."
I think I've got it figured out. That if they went like all 4 points of the compass, east, west, north, and south, in a certain region, and established at the highest points of each region a signal area, they could basically box out or square out all the real estate at those 4 points right. of the compass, and with signals, with the sunlight, they could go, I would estimate, maybe I'm wrong on this, but you could probably see those signals 50 miles.
Well, and I'll tell you that I've got something on
the... Am I wrong on the way they set this up?
I'm not exactly sure how they set it up, but they were able to communicate, like you say, from one east, north, south.
They had to have, like, all four points of the compass.
Right. Yeah. Now, General Miles... was already familiar with the heliograph. And get this, while he was serving in Montana in 1878 and 79, he borrowed six of them from the Signal Corps and established a line from Fort Keogh to Fort Custer. Now, I looked that up on the map. Fort Keogh is near Miles City, Montana.
Right.
Fort Custer is near a town called Hardin, and that's 118 miles. So I'm thinking, I don't think they actually went the full distance of 118 with one set. They probably had some in between.
But
that's 118.
There
miles.
Again, now you're talking about the landmass and the geographic area as far as trees, hills, etc.
Yeah.
Must have been pretty doggone flat.
Right. Yeah. But Miles directed successful heliograph communication between Vancouver Barracks, Washington, to Mount Hood, Oregon. So, again, and this is up where, you know, it's pretty cloudy. But, you know, to build his southwestern system, Miles requested a dozen additional operators and equipment.
How big were they?
You know, I did not have a picture of them, so I don't know how big the actual machine was.
I mean, you'd be lugging these heliographs all over if they're...
Well, but they were broken down into three packs or parts,
you
know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So three guys could carry them, so I don't know how heavy they were.
Okay.
But to build this operation, he ordered additional operators in May and June of 1886, 34 heliographs, 10 telescopes, 30 marine binoculars, and 11 men were detailed to Miles. So obviously, if they had a telescope or binoculars, you could see the signal from a long ways away.
Yeah.
So the officers were assisted by the Signal Corps, established training sessions at various forts, located station sites, and built their systems by connecting stations one by one. The New Mexico district was comprised of 12 stations, each strategically placed. His system covered 313, what they call airline miles. So to me, that's just as the bird flies, the crow flies.
Yeah.
So, but 313 miles. The system was managed by 29 men, mostly privates. Arizona lines included 12 stations and involved 65 enlisted men. And get this, Eb, you asked this, only one day was lost because of cloudy weather.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Really?
So down, yeah. So the sun shines all the time.
I don't. I wish you could find out more about this because I'm intrigued by the fact. How did they make each flutter of the shutter? How do you like that?
That's good.
Flutter of the shutter to discern a letter or parts of the alphabet.
I don't understand. I should have checked on that. And if it's Morse code, that would explain.
I like that flutter of the shutter.
Okay. Well, so anyway, the hub of the network down there was Fort Bowie in southwestern Arizona.
Yeah.
More messages were sent from Bowie Station than any other. The heliograph had been used in Arizona actually prior to Miles' time. This is kind of a little interesting side note. It had been used prior by a Captain Mouse in 1881. He sent messages from Fort Grant to his girlfriend, a cattleman's daughter, using just a handmade mirror.
The whole world, if they knew how to read those notes, can you imagine what their thoughts were?
I don't even want to go there.
At waterhole number 3.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the heliograph during the Geronimo campaign apparently had three main functions. In addition to circulating information within the system, telegraph messages were relayed via the heliograph, and both methods were used as supplementary lines of communication.
I've got another question for you, and in your looking in history, the Indians, the Apaches, etc., Geronimo, and all the other Indian chiefs were very smart.
Yes.
Why didn't they do something to disrupt?
I'm going to get
to that.
I'm going to get to that. I got it covered. So the stations and the heliographs were, you know, great tactical value. During an attempt by some Apaches to enter the United States, these heliographs were used in transmitting troop movement orders. Miles undoubtedly was more certain of the positions of the various commands than he would have been with only telegraph and courier communications. So his heliographs also served to fill in, I guess, what you'd call the blind spots between normal communication points. So it filled in, you know, what the telegraph and couriers couldn't do. So the story is told by Miles regarding Geronimo's reaction to the new signaling device. And we kind of have to take this with a grain of salt. It seems a little bit exaggerated since it is known that the Apache knew of some of these stations. Okay? Here's the deal, Zeb. No heliograph stations were attacked. Miles has described the historic meeting in Skeleton Canyon, which led to Geronimo's surrender, as follows. Okay, here it is. This is what took place, according to Miles. I told him, Geronimo, that we had the use of steam and could move troops with great rapidity, that we also had the telegraph and the heliostat, both superior to any of their methods of communication. I said to Geronimo, we can watch your movements and send messages over the tops of these mountains in a small part of one day and over a distance which would take a man mounted on a swift pony 20 days to travel. Geronimo's face assumed an air of curiosity and incredulity.
He was incredulous about it.
As I have previously had occasion to remark, when an Indian sees something that he cannot comprehend, he attributes it to some power beyond his knowledge and control. Geronimo told me he had observed these flashes upon the mountain heights and believed them to be spirits, had avoided them by going around those points of the mountains, never realizing that it was a subtle power used by his enemies.
Now, right there, I got to say, I am surprised that you are saying that they were never attacked.
Well, and according to this, Geronimo thought there was something, the great spirit.
So they had seen the flashes
right,
of light,
yeah,
and assumed that it was something with the great spirit.
Right. So they didn't, they just avoided.
But once they realized that it was a perpetration by mankind and the cavalry and the army, you would think they'd have done something to counteract
it. But it was too late. I think it was too late. In fact, Miles, for a demonstration of the heliograph, Miles had a message sent to Fort Bowie inquiring for Geronimo if his brother were well. A reply was returned shortly, and Miles related this. Here's what he said. This struck the savage, Geronimo, with awe and evidently made a strong impression upon him. I noticed that he said something to one of his warriors close by, at which the warrior quietly turned on his heel, walked back a short distance to where his pony was tied, jumped on his back, and rode rapidly back in the direction of the mountain from whence Geronimo had come. Now, Miles asked Geronimo, what did you tell the warrior? And so here's what Geronimo said. The interpreter replied, he told him to go and tell Natchez, another chief,
yeah,
that there was a power here which he could not understand, and to come in and come quick. The heliostat, Miles' term for the heliograph, had performed its last and best work, and in a few hours, Natchez came riding down from the mountains with his band of warriors and their families and came into camp, though with much hesitation and reserve.
Wow, we have a caller with a question real quick. Stand by. Caller, real fast, you're on the air fast.
Well, I just know that, like out here south of Declo, when you get too close to the mountain, you can't pick up anything from off the top. I just wondered, you know, that could have been a possibility for them. I mean, they didn't know that evidently, but anyway, that's the way it is out here.
Oh, so you're saying that the Indian tribes, if they got too close to the bottom of the mountain, they wouldn't have realized or recognized what was happening?
Well, they wouldn't have been able to be seen by the people up on the top of the mountain, you know.
Yeah.
To signal that, for them to know that they were there.
Yeah. It is amazing, though, as to how we think back in old days as primitive, but the technology and technocracy is really amazing.
It really is.
Thank you for your call, caller. I appreciate that.
So, you know, when Geronimo under guard, the campaign was almost over, things were settling down, and Miles wrote his wife in 1886. Here's what he said to her. He said, "We have at last been most successful. I am making a clean sweep of the hostile Apache out of this country, and it has given a feeling of relief and security to thousands of homes that they have never felt before. It is a brilliant ending of a difficult problem." So he goes on, he said, the Miles heliograph system, there's some figures that I think is pretty interesting, had made possible to send over 2,200 messages, some over 200 words, and his men succeeded in sending a message of 25 words along a zigzag course of 400 miles, followed by an answer in about 4 hours. Impressed by the speed and accuracy of the heliograph and their operators, Army officers established an extensive practice operation in Arizona and New Mexico during the summer of 1890. Now, at this time, messages were sent over 130 miles between only two stations. Two stations.
Wow.
And the military decided to incorporate heliographs into the communications arsenal. And today, many of the peaks and hilltops used to flash messages serve as relay stations for TV, microwave, cell phones, electronic devices. And, but you got to salute these officers and enlisted men. I mean, they trudged up the top of these mountains.
Yeah.
They camped up on top where it was cold and windy.
What a lonely life.
Taking their mirrors and...
Yeah.
But
did they do the same? I'm going to ask you a question. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Yes, I do. Did they do the same thing, perhaps to a limited degree, at night with lanterns?
I don't know that.
Because light in the evening in the dark would carry a long way.
Well, and if you had your telescope or your binoculars and had it set exactly at the right place to look for a light, I don't suppose that would. It couldn't happen, yeah.
You know, that was interesting. You got to find out more about that, though.
I do. I'm confused. I should have checked on the Morse code thing, because I don't know what year that was invented.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Samuel Morse?
Samuel Morse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
Call him. Ask him.
Well, you know what, though? The telegraph was going.
Yeah.
And the telegraph was Morse code, right?
Yeah.
So this had to be Morse code.
Boy, if you had an operator with a cold, he could really mess things up. Achoo!
A sneeze, yeah. I could.
I got to run. That was interesting. Find out a little bit more for next week, though.
I
appreciate that.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.